Eric Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on this hour, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian, who I believe is in Pasadena right now, but that's the TV critic convention thing. Let's see, Scotty J with the Suburban Perspective coming up. Tim Riley will join us here in just a second from the Ministry of Truth. Let's see, what the hell was I was reading something here, and what the hell was I just reading that I was going to repeat on the air? Well, I've got nothing. Yeah, are we all just losing our minds today? Sarah's at death's door. Scotty's fine, actually. Scotty, I get the feeling he took it easy this weekend. That he was not unduly hard on himself. All right. Rick, did you see Abe Vigoda on Letterman? Funny as hell. He just walked across the stage. He looked pretty good for being 150. The great thing about Abe Vigoda is he doesn't have to do anything anymore. He just has to be alive. That's all he has to do. He just has to not be dead, and he's fantastic. Rick, I almost spit coffee all over my computer when you played the Michael Jackson Worst Noise Ever. That truly is your tread. Let's just play that one once more.
Put the little round object in his mouth. It was delicious.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Genius.
The new poll shows Hillary Clinton leads the pack among Democrats.
Bam!
She is a favorite of 41% of Democrats, more than double any of her rivals.
In your face, Scotty J.
But meanwhile, her campaign manager, a familiar name Democrat, Terry McAuliffe, he says it's time to educate the general public about what he calls the real Hillary Clinton.
Uh-huh. And to know her, you'll love her. And by the time we're done with this campaign, everybody's going to know Hillary Clinton. And they're going to know why we need her as president. She is tough. She is smart. She's compassionate. She knows every world leader.
Note that he doesn't say that by the end of the campaign, everybody will love her. Because even he knows he can't peddle those wares here.
He says it's time to forget about Hillary's past and look forward to the future.
She's going to go door to door. She's going to sit in small groups. She's going to meet people. She's going to talk to people. She's going to lay out her vision for America. Forget about the past. People want to know, how are you going to take this country forward?
Okay. All right.
Mayor Bloomberg agrees that Hillary is a woman, but running for president should not be a factor.
Senator Clinton is a very smart person. The fact that she's a woman, I guess, is interesting, but it shouldn't have anything to do with whether or not she is electable or you should vote for her.
Well, that guy just sounds wormy. He just sounds all kinds of weaselly, doesn't he? All right, fantastic.
Stop calling me a cute little piece of meat, says Leonardo DiCaprio. He wanted to give up acting for a time after the hit movie Titanic. He was back to being considered another piece of cute meat. This is in quotes. I don't know where this came from. After the 1997's film release box office success, an image he wants to get away from these days, it was pretty disheartening to be, well, objectified like that.
No, shut the hell up.
I wanted to stop acting for a little bit.
And yet, he didn't. He made like 900 films.
I changed my life in many ways, but at the same time, I can't say it doesn't give me opportunity. What does all this mean?
I swear to God,
it
made me for the first time.
Supermodel.
That's what I'm saying. Seriously, nothing makes me want to. Just make me want to go just cut those people up with knives. I mean, seriously, I'm tired of being pretty. Problem solved. You know what I mean? It's just, seriously,
if it was a piece of meat, I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm not suggesting that would happen. I'm just saying, there's no faster way to lose all of our sympathy than complain about not being taken seriously because you're just too damned handsome. You know what I mean? And especially when
not anymore. It's pretty bloated.
Well, he was. I saw some pictures of him in the Globe a while back where he was a whole lot more of a Leo to love. I mean, he looked like he'd been boozing it up pretty heavily. But right after Titanic, when he did not take time off, when he put out, didn't he put out like 12 films or something? He put out The Man in the Iron Mask, and then he put out The Beach, and then there was some other crap that he put out. And he's one of those guys that is going to age really badly, too, because he's going to have that horrible combination, as opposed to, like, Matt Damon's going to age pretty well, I think. I think he is going to look good. He's going to look like a distinguished older man, and even, not that anybody will be seeing him in films at this point, but Ben Affleck, I think, will age pretty well, because he's got such a classic Hollywood profile to him. He's got the
square jaw,
the piercing eyes. I think he'll be able to pull off aging in Hollywood. I think Ben Affleck is going to have a longer career, really, all kidding aside, than a lot of people think. Leonardo DiCaprio, though, is just going to be that weird combination.
Like Danny DeVito.
Exactly. He's going to be that weird combination
baby face?
Of old baby face. Mm-hmm. The old and the baby face.
Like a Boston Bulldog.
Yes, exactly. The old guy with the baby face is just a weird look. You can't really make that work. Because then you're just some guy, you look like a Gerber child. You know what I mean? You look like you're bald, but you still got...
Kind of like that guy, who's Angelina Jolie's dad?
John Voight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, yeah. No, it's true. It doesn't really work well. That's like most of those kids that have baby faces, like most of the child actors, and then they grow up and they just become buck-toothed and hideous. So,
I don't like that Michael Hall kid.
Anthony Michael Hall, perfect example.
Yeah.
Old guy, baby face, though, and then it all just is bad. It just, none of it works out at all.
Now he just looks like an insurance salesman.
It's true. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, a 39-year-old man is accused of hitting a 6-year-old child in the face with an orange. This comes to us out of Florida, of all
does
places.
It?
Yes, it does.
That's been I lost. Ah, damn you. All right.
Jeffrey Eller arrested and charged with one count of child abuse after Brevard County Sheriff's deputies were called to a residence investigating a disturbance. Deputies reported the child's mother said Eller, her boyfriend, picked up an orange and threw it at her son. The police report showed that the orange struck the boy in the face, prompting the woman to call authorities. Eller was handcuffed and taken to Brevard County Jail Complex, but the judge ordered him released under community supervision.
Fantastic. All right. Let's do like two more here, and then we'll talk to Scotty J.
All right. The Reverend Jesse Jackson, the leader of African Americans everywhere, and the two-time president.
All Chinese waiters follow Jesse Jackson.
Because he's the, I guess the white man named him the official spokesman.
You know, that damn blue book is just going to be that is the worst thing ever to happen to this program. That ethnic tolerance book or whatever it is they gave to us. That is the worst, that is the single worst thing they ever could have done.
Well, when was Mr. Jackson elected a leader of any group of people?
Anything anywhere?
Yeah.
I don't know. And does he actually does he actually hold church services somewhere?
I don't know, but every time he talks, it looks like his dentures are going to fall out. He has kind of Mr. Ed Teeth. Watch him the next time he talks.
Mr. Ed Teeth.
And envision...
Whitey's oppressing me.
Those teeth being in the mouth of Mr. Ed.
I was going to say, Wilbur, and then I was going to say instead of Wilbur, Whitey, but that didn't really work.
No.
What was my point going to be?
I don't know.
Jesse Jackson is one of those guys, though, that, I mean, in his time, at his peak, at his prime, he was among the finest orators on earth. I mean, really, when he was at his peak, when he was at the top of his game, Jesse Jackson, all kidding aside, one of the finest public speakers, and I've never seen him in person. I've only kind of seen the, you know, the sort of the news and the old films of him speaking, but like Billy Graham, like Billy Joel before him, like the piano man before him, Jesse Jackson.
And the Tony Tennille before her.
No, Jesse Jackson, there was a time when he was one of the finest public speakers in the world, period. And he's not really able to do it anymore. I don't know whether it's just age or whether, you know, whatever. I don't know. But you'll see him on chat shows occasionally, panel shows, and they'll bring him on, and everybody sort of gives him deference because whenever he opens his mouth to speak, people are like, here it comes. You know, here comes the golden silver-tongued oration that we've come to expect from Jesse Jackson, because at one time in the day, he would be able to do that. Not now, though. Now he just speaks really haltingly, and he does all of, well, I believe the point. And he's got this sort of weird verbal constipation where he doesn't really speak all that well. But, like, no one wants to interrupt him because he's Jesse Jackson and they think that he's about to say something brilliant and fiery and that it doesn't really ever happen. His high watermark was the green eggs and ham thing on SNL. He's been downhill since then. So, I had some other point I was going to make. Jesse Jackson, the blue handbook. Oh, let me ask you this. Does anybody... never mind. I shouldn't say it. Never mind.
No, please.
No.
Oh, we can take it.
It's not really about you being able to take it. Never mind. I was just wondering, because, of course, everyone knows that it is improper and, I believe, frowned upon by CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, as it should be, to engage in any sort of leering or objectifying or... it is wrong to engage in any sort of overtly sexual manner toward a coworker. And that, of course, we know that's wrong, and it is correct that it's wrong.
You aren't hitting on Tim or I, are you?
No, I didn't want.
They should be grazing from the company truck.
I was just curious as to whether that went for prospective employees as well. Do you know if that's the case? Is it?
Is this about some weekend show?
No.
No.
Oh, why would you say that?
I was thinking, who would be auditioning for what?
Prospective employees.
I found myself wondering that the other day, because, of course, it's wrong to hit on coworkers. That's the sort of thing that'll get you a trip to the office, right?
Right.
But I found myself wondering, is it against company policy to hit on prospective coworkers? What if they haven't been hired yet?
Do you know that they will be hired, though?
I'm just speaking theoretically. I'm not speaking about anybody in particular.
Mm.
In no way am I speaking about any particular. I just found myself idly wondering that.
How can they be afforded with the present budget?
No, I'm just speaking in a completely hypothetical sense.
Oh.
I'm very confused.
All right.
Are you considering a casting call of some sort?
No, I'm just saying, that's why I didn't even want to say it out loud. You all, like, push me to say it.
Well, you're obviously curious. I mean, there has to be a reason why you want to know.
No, it was just one of those things I was curious about, just idly, for no reason. Did I read this email about Scotty yet?
No.
Rick, please don't use my name. This man says, my first boyfriend looked like a young William H. Macy, and his name was Scotty. He'd be about 40 years old now. Here's Tim Riley. Let's do one more, and then we'll bring Scotty in.
What does a young Bill Macy look like?
I don't know. We should ask this person who I won't name. Here's Tim Riley.
This is called a job watch.
Oh, here's your job watch job. For Monday.
Wow, I don't even know where that
radio
is.
Radio program. It's been a while since we've had one. There we go.
All right.
Thank you. And there we go. All right.
Minimum wage.
Of all sorts of occupations are familiar with corporate downsizing and the toll it takes on those laid off. But mental health problems can also arise from those who keep their jobs. Employees who remain at work after downsizing may be at increased risk of being prescribed psychiatric drugs. In other words, enforced redundancies may boost mental health problems among those who keep their jobs.
Oh, this is a British story because they're saying redundancies, not firings. Well, of course, everybody knows that because when the
survivor's guilt.
When wheat goes down before the sickle, it's not just survivor's guilt. It's, of course, just a sinking feeling that you're next.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, we've all been in those situations where it's like
we've been wrong every time until it really happened.
No, we always think we're about to get fired when it's not going to happen. And as soon as we start feeling secure, shall we decorate the studio? No, let's not. And then we finally give in. We hang one poster in the studio. Bam. Mm-hmm. We're all out on the street clutching boxes. But of course, when people get fired around you, that you just walk around in a state of perpetual, you know, on tenterhooks because you're always feeling that you're going to be the next to be blown out. So, yeah, and the great thing is I read a version of this study somewhere the other day, and they said that they tracked it by looking at, like, insurance companies and seeing, like, how psychotropic drugs or whatever they were prescribed for the employees.
Oh, insurance companies are the worst.
No, it's true. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I mean, and they
welcome layoffs back in my working church.
And they were, like, looking to see, you know, they found that the use of Prozac and other similar drugs at companies spiked after, even among people that were still employed. They would do a round of layoffs, and everybody else was like, oh, God, I'm so, where's my Paxil? And everybody who was left at the company was just convinced that they were going to be hosed next, as we always are.
You've got to stack this size. Please file this by noontime.
Yeah, right.
Put them in the living section of the newspaper and throw them in the barrel on the way to the lunch wagon. Somebody else's problem 6 months down the line. I'm not going to be here.
Fantastic. Excellent. All right, there you go. There's your job watch. Or whatever the hell, David. Monday. All right.
Minimum wage. Yeah!
All right, there you go. Tim Riley. He'll return later on in the hour. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson
Scotty
Show.
Scotty J. This is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
He put the little round object in his mouth. It was delicious.
Hello, Scotty J. How are you, sir?
Doing good.
How's life going?
Excellent.
Scotty J's been very nice to me today. He went and bought me a Visa.
No, Scotty J is a good person. Scotty J, you are a good person. You're productive. Yes?
Oh, well, only one side of my ear was working there for a second. You know, the headphones. Yeah.
Are those the guest headphones or Tim's?
Guest.
Okay, because I think Tim's headphones actually only work on one side.
Well, I didn't push it in far enough.
All right, there you go. Deal. Okay. How was your weekend? How's Mrs. J? How are all the little J's?
Excellent.
All right.
Actually, I did a little spring cleaning this weekend. Took a good five, full-size garbage sacks to Goodwill.
To help the less fortunate.
Yes.
What sorts of things did you get rid of?
Oh, there was like a few blankets, pillows, games, And then all the, you know, little household knickknacks that you have out on display that you're sick of looking at after 5-6 years.
You donate clothes too, like shirts and shoes
yes, those are gone now.
All right.
And hopefully the memory of whoever this writer is, this ghost writer.
Well, why don't you show him the email and see if he recognizes this
name. Harold, do you recognize this name? Don't say it on the air. Do you recognize that name?
I do not.
Okay.
For some reason.
All right. Well, I'm just saying.
I do not know who that is.
It's time for another exciting edition of The Suburban Perspective with Scotty J. Scotty J.
You know, a lot of people think this is a dumb Republican idiot view. And I just can't, you know, believe
what?
That.
What?
That they would think that.
The what is a dumb Republican view?
The Suburban Perspective.
Who are those people? I certainly haven't said that.
I've just heard stuff from people.
All right, from pundits?
Yes.
All right, if you've got a question for Scotty J. and the Suburban Perspective, here's your phone number. It's 503-733-2970. Everything should have done this going into a break. 503-733.
Well, we actually do have to break.
And we will be back right after the break.
Well, do you want a break now, and we'll take a question for the Suburban Perspective on the other side? All right. It's 503-733-2970, because I have no topic prepared.
Oh, that's good, actually.
No, I have three. I have three different things to ask you about. What are you doing?
I've got plenty of topics right here.
Can I see that?
No.
He has a full page of handwritten notes.
Just in case you try to blindside me.
Well, no, because when I say I have no Suburban Perspective topic, I have three and I was trying to decide which one to do.
Oh, okay.
Wait, did you prepare notes in advance?
Yes, because, see, I'll, you know, the other day when I was feeling all...
Well, okay, we can't break now. Okay, we have to stay here now.
No. The other day when I was feeling William hung and you were firing off all these Hillary questions and stuff, I knew what I wanted to say, but I couldn't even talk, let alone think, and of course I looked like an idiot.
Is this when I asked you why you disliked Hillary and you didn't
know? All those questions.
And so,
let me ask you this. Okay, go ahead.
And you can just answer this yes or no. Did you go on the internet and copy down things to repeat to me?
No.
You did not copy down facts from the internet?
No. This is...
Where did you get these facts from?
This is my own little quest for stuff that I...
Are they facts or opinions?
In case you hit me, it's a...
Are these opinions or these
stuff?
Are these opinions or these facts?
A little bit of factage.
Are these facts are these things that you wrote down from the internet?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I needed proof that just in case I'm asked certain questions.
Proof about what?
Whatever I might be asked.
What topic did you prepare for?
We'll figure that out right after the break.
How do you even know what I'm going to ask you?
I don't. That's the problem.
So you prepared notes for the Suburban Perspective.
In the hopes.
Is this like a Cliff Notes kind of thing?
Yes.
So if I said, you know, blah, blah, blah about Bill Clinton, you'd be able to, well, Rick, the Suburban Perspective, and then you would just read something off a piece of paper and try to pass it off as your own thought.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping.
Okay, that's not really the Suburban Perspective. That's the perspective of some guy on the internet whose work you have copied.
No, these are like statistical facts.
About what?
Just whatever the topic might be.
But clearly, you don't know what the topic
is. Exactly. So this might.
I want to know what's on that.
You've just written down a bunch of stuff about Bill Clinton.
It might be garbage.
You've just written down a bunch of things about
Bill
Clinton.
Will you read it as a sample?
I don't even have to look. I know that's exactly what it is. You wrote down a bunch of things about Bill Clinton, didn't you?
No, but I did write my own opinion on something.
Okay, well, if it's your own opinion...
This is my own opinion.
Do you need to have it written down in front of you?
Sure, in case you blindside me with a question and throw me off the track.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's take a break now. We'll come back. We'll talk to Scotty J. as part of The Suburban Perspective. Later on, Peter Carlin, more of Tim Riley from the Ministry of Truth. You stay there. It's The Rick Emerson Show.
Oh, you're a mean man.
Hello. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. It's 503-733-2970. And so forth. Let's see here. I'm reading the, let's see, Rick, about assless chaps. Rick, I don't get it. Aren't all chaps assless? If they have an ass, then they're just pants. Okay, that's a fair point. I never really thought about that.
You can have full chaps.
Let's see, Rick. I heard this morning that you were going to see a therapist tonight. I want you to... Oh, I see. Oh, this is someone... This is a shrink who's pitching her service to me. Listen to this. Rick, I know what your problem is. You're too intelligent for your own good. Clearly, this is a person I should be seeing. She gets me.
Oh, boy.
I already feel a kinship with whoever this is that's emailing in. I'll talk about that, because I have the shrink tonight. What is it, 3.5? In just 3.5 hours, my sanity begins. So we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. Let's do this. Let's welcome Peter Carlin to the Rick Emerson radio program. Then we'll talk to Scotty Jink at the suburban perspective. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hey, yo, yo, yo.
What's up with you? How was Pasadena?
It was swell.
Are you back now?
I am.
All right. You are all business today.
What do you want me to do? Are you seriously seeing a shrink, like, unironically, or is it showbiz? Are you going to giggle through it?
That's a mean thing to say.
You a question.
No, Peter, he's having mental problems.
Are you having an emotional problem? I mean, you could just be having, like, a low-level angst, but you want to deal with it. You know what I'm saying?
Sarah believes that I'm having some sort of...
I believe he's in the midst of some kind of breakdown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for real.
I don't necessarily share that sentiment, but I do acknowledge that I've been feeling somewhat frazzled lately.
Frazzled?
Yes, I've been feeling a little stressed.
I think it's okay, you know, just introduce a new person into his life to have somebody to talk to about his problems.
Because I don't get enough of that. I don't have enough people listening to me blather on endlessly about myself.
Yeah,
now.
But we can't help you. Maybe you're shrinking.
That is true. The audience really just reinforces all my worst traits. Let's just be honest. Let's just call it what it is. This show really is the worst thing for me.
Are you seeing a boy or a girl?
Actually, it's... Now, do you really care about this, or are you just screwing with me?
What? Why would I, if I didn't care, enough about you. What about me?
No, I see, here's the thing, you got a dry wit sometimes, and I can't tell when you're being ironic.
Especially when you're showing a little bit of vulnerability.
It's
true.
You can't see me making little air quotation marks around everything I say.
Today?
Go ahead, no, tell me, are you seeing a man or a woman?
Very special, Rick Emerson. I talked about this a little bit last week. For the first time, I'm seeing a male shrink. I've always seen women in the past.
Oh, okay, so you're not a rookie.
I'll just give the short story, and I won't make the audience listen to this whole monologue again that I did last week. But for a long time, when I was a younger man, I was of course just a bastard, and I would have all these girlfriends who would date me and then realize what a horrible person I was,
mm-hmm.
and then they would be like, baby, you really gotta go see somebody. You gotta go see a shrink, and I'd be like, fine, woman, and I would go see just to placate them.
Yeah,
the therapy would do no good. Because I would just be all angry and just be there to make my girlfriend happy. And the thing is, of course, the girlfriends, they were right. But, of course, it did me no good because, you know, it's that old thing about blah, 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 blah. Doesn't do you any good until you go for yourself. You can't go for somebody else. Da, 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 da. I went a few years ago seriously. For the very first time, I went seriously of my own volition when I was doing the syndicated show. You know, and it's not like it's the worst thing that ever happened to somebody, but I was having a real bad time because the show was just like a terrible experience for me. Went to the shrink for the first time just because I felt like I needed to go, and really was a great thing for me. And in a weird way, I felt like seeing a female shrink was probably better because I kind of had a low-grade crush on her, and because she was a woman, I felt just by default, as I do around every single woman everywhere, I felt obligated to be entertaining and funny, which of course meant that I would just look through and just dread up every single effed up thing about me that I could possibly find, trying to sort of keep her amused.
Yeah.
Anyway, blah, 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 blah. That kind of came to its natural end because I just sort of felt better about things. And then, I don't know, about a month ago, I just feeling, as I said, just a little frazzled, just feeling kind of like a live wire all the time. Sort of like you got that adrenaline switch inside that turns on sometimes, but then it's supposed to turn off again. And I kind of got that adrenaline switch that's not turning off lately. It's just sort of always on.
You know what cures that, though?
Alcohol.
Drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I have thought seriously about acquiring a drinking habit.
Yeah.
But Sarah has made many observations to the effect that she believes that... I'm not seeing the shrink because of Sarah, but Sarah has... When I mentioned that I was going to see a shrink, Sarah lent her hearty approval to that idea.
It's always good to hear from your employees.
Yeah, no, Sarah felt and feels, I think, very strongly that it is a good time for me to see a shrink.
I think it'll be good for you.
Anyway, so, but I'm seeing a shrink, then I have a guy, and it's the first time I've ever gone to see a guy, which is probably good, because so much of my stoop, not that you really, see, this is the longest, this is why you shouldn't have asked, because now I get this long, stupid answer, because I got all of this, like, stupid crap, and it's all, like, so much of it is just tied up in these, like, idiotic you know, just crap that is like all bound up in like a, in like being a, like a dumb macho jerk guy.
Oh, you know, also else though, also else I said, splitting briefly with the English language. If I remember correctly from the Bigger Than Jesus show. And the autobiographical aspects of that.
Yes, sir.
That if I would guess that you would be closer to daddy issues than mommy issues. So therefore, your paternal shrink might do well for you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, probably because my as you noted, I mean, my mother is, of course, like all boys say about all mothers, my mother is a saint. My father somewhat less so. But also, and when I say guy issues, I mean, I just have all, because guys just like that you don't ever want to like, I am strong alpha man. I am Iron Man. I will hold all problems. I will never bend or break. And, you know, I can carry all the, like all guys see themselves as Atlas, just totally holding up the world. And, you get all bound up in these stupid ideas of just being like the big, strong, silent, idiot guy. And then, of course, that never goes well, because then you end up, that's always the guy that's like, you know, they find him coming to work with a howitzer on the back of his truck.
That would rock.
So I'll be curious to see if like seeing a guy shrink is different for me than seeing a female shrink. So
yeah. Plus chicks dig it when you whimper and whine.
No, well that's the thing though, is I mean that really is, that's my whole fear about going to see the male shrink though, is that because it's not a woman, and she was hot, she looked like Diane Keaton, kind of Manhattan era, and so because it's not a woman, I have this whole fear that I'm just gonna have no, there's gonna be no sort of Rosetta Stone, there's gonna be like no foothold there for me to wanna like tell the guy anything, cause like really what's the point?
Yeah.
Really? I have no desire to make a large black man fall in love with me. So, you know what I mean?
Well, you never know.
I mean, well, look, I mean, Rick
Maybe
Emerson...
you guys will hit it off.
Rick Emerson is open to anything. If the chemistry's there, the heart wants what it wants. I'm probably speaking too much now. Anywho, how was Pasadena?
Swinging, man. It was great. It was fine. It was exhausting and strange. It was everything it's ever supposed to be.
Was Paula Abdul there?
Yeah.
Now you...
Don't you read the newspaper?
Okay, now look, you bastard. I'm trying to say, this is like when you have the pre-interview on the Tonight Show.
Were you setting me up?
I'm setting you up.
That was a setup.
It was going to be like a little alley-oop, like a pick-and-roll thing, where I set it up and then you knock it down.
And I hear you used to be a Boy Scout.
I hear that something wacky happened on the way to the studio, Peter.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Okay.
Yeah,
so
Paula was there. She seemed like relatively normal, and she tried to explain away like all her bizarro behavior and said, well, it was all these technical problems. It wasn't me being totally ripped on drugs and alcohol because I have Rick Emerson-sized personal problems that I can't even begin to deal with, even though we all knew that's what she was thinking.
Okay.
So there was that.
Well, her whole thing was what? That she had been doing interviews all day and that she was getting two audio feeds at once?
She was on a satellite tour, and I've done one of those. I did mine was a radio one, and she had done a TV one. And what she described is very familiar, which is that you wake up at about 3:30 in the morning, and you stumble to some place where they hook you up, and you do, like, endless interviews, like, all in a row. Boom, 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 all the way across the country. You're just catching drive time. But in her case, she's doing TV stuff. And you sit there and you're all by yourself and all you hear is like what comes at you through your earpiece, which in my case was a telephone. In her case was one of those IUD things.
Those in-ear monitor things, yeah.
Yeah. And she said that when things got whacked out, it was because she began to get two feeds at once. And so she was like trying to talk to people in Seattle, but she was hearing voices and nonsense coming from, you know, St. Louis or wherever. And so she couldn't figure out what the heck was going on or was answering the wrong series of questions and blah, blah, blah. And so, well, that seems like, I buy that, you know, I can see how that is. And it was like at the end of 3 hours, so it's probably, you know, she's probably been up since like 3 a.m. and probably totally wasted before she went to bed. and then she gets into the situation and then she has technical problems and it all, you know, it's quick. It's a quick road downhill from there.
And so do you believe that that's the deal? Do you think that is the actual reason?
It could be one of these deals where that was true and also she was ripped on drugs and alcohol or downers or whatever the heck she likes to take.
Fantastic.
Because she has that look. I mean, everything about her just seems mediated through so many levels of, you know, either cosmetics or, you know, what some sort of chemical or cosmetic enhancement. And so I find it, you know, kind of difficult. I mean, I don't know. It to me, there's nothing about her character or what she exhibits on stage or on screen that makes me think that she would not, I mean, that makes a problem with substances out, you know, seem
right.
Not rational or logical in her situation.
I have no idea what you just said. That was like the most tortured syntax.
I have an easier time believing that she would fall into having a drug problem than in believing that she wouldn't. Because
you say that she seems like the kind who might be a lush.
Or something. She's
or
somebody
something.
Who leans heavily on other externals to keep herself shored up, obviously physically.
I forget there was that. I think who was somebody who was, there was some allegation a while back, and it was just an allegation, that she was like guzzling whiskey out of a Pepsi can when she was on stage, or when she was on the show.
Well, probably a Coke can, because, you know, Coke is their sponsor. Yeah.
See, and I wouldn't know. See, I don't watch, and I'm not trying to be hipper than the room. I don't watch American Idol, because I watch it and I can feel myself getting stupider. I'm not trying to be too cool for school. It's just not a thing I watch.
That's cool.
Hey, what do you make of the, speaking of, and I'm working backward here because Rosie O'Donnell had made some cracks about Paula Abdul. What do you make of that Trump-Rosie thing, contrived or not? And how degrading is it to see Barbara Walters, who, you know, of all of them, has the most sterlingly reputation, just getting sucked into that whole morass?
Well, I mean, Barbara, I don't have a whole lot of, I mean, I don't know. I don't see her as particularly sterling one way or the other. I mean, it's this weird situation where it's like it's like a horrible person going after a terrible person. Who do you want to win, you know? And that's like Trump and Rosie. And then Barbara gets in, and it's like she's kind of sleazy her own self. I mean, that kind of goopy celebrity-driven crapola stuff that she does on TV. You know, I mean, I don't have a whole lot of patience for that either. I mean, she's that very, you know, that extreme sentimentalist kind of interview. And I just, you know, I don't have a whole lot of time for her. And the same deal, I mean, Rosie and Trump, I mean, he's right. She is mean as a snake, and you know, and she's right. He's a big jerk. And a moron and a hypocrite, and he's got like obvious personality disorders, which he keeps, you know, trying to fix, not by doing the mature thing, going to see a therapist a la Rick Emerson.
That's right.
But by like recasting the New York skyline in his hideous, you know, absurd image.
That's fantastic. You ought to really, I don't know if you've used that quote before in something and you're just reciting it, but you ought to write that down.
What would I just say?
Instead of recasting the New York skyline in his hideous, absurd image.
Yeah, no.
Fantastic phrase. Now, that is what Hunter Thompson would call a word jewel. You know, write that down. That's gold, my friend.
It's gone now, man.
Right.
In the ether.
All right. Well, I apologize here. We don't have a whole lot of time because I got to do some crap and then I got to do some things. So,
oh, yeah. Are you a man about a horse?
Going to have to skedaddle. But we'll talk. I don't know. We'll talk. We'll do lunch. We, you know, this is what I was going to mention. This is our final week in this studio. I don't think you've ever seen this studio where we are now.
Yes, wait, which one? The one that you were in?
The minuscule, the production closet that we're in?
The Altcoin Tower?
Yeah. Have you been in here?
Yeah, I was there like a few months ago.
Were you here for the book?
Probably.
Well, whatever. Anyway, so we're moving into an actual real studio 1 week from today.
In the same building?
No, down at the KUFO building.
Where the heck is that?
It's by where we used to be. It's right by the old KOTK building, that big cheese grater-looking building.
You're back at the cheese grater?
Well, we're next door. But the point is, we are going to be in a golden palace of a studio. It is a fantastic, with like actual guest microphones. And
I'm here all week. What happened? Did you have to cut me
off? I believe that.
What?
I believe you can't
that,
say
Peter
that.
Carlin?
You can't say that.
I can't?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was like close enough of an entendre to be. I'm terribly sorry.
That's a single entendre.
We need
to
talk about this off the air.
My showers are the same color as everybody else's.
Well, I'm terribly sorry. Did you really seriously have to, like, was there like blank air right in that second?
No, through the magic of
no, just nips it right out.
Through the magic of digital editing, no one ever noticed it until you mentioned it, but that's okay.
Wow, I am really sorry.
All right, that's what it's there for. My point is, a week from today, we are...
I'm on a roll.
Okay, no, but here's the thing. So next Monday, 1 week from today, is our first day in that new studio, and so my friend Peter Carlin, and one of the defining characteristics of the new studio, I say, making this segment even more overtime, is the fact that we have multiple guest microphones, and we can do real guest interviews. So will you, Peter Carlin, on the air right now in front of God and everyone, pledge to come in and be our first in-studio guest?
When? Sure.
Next Monday.
Next Monday?
Yes, sir.
I reckon that can happen. What time?
I don't know. Around the same time, around 2.
Yeah, probably.
God bless you, Peter Carlin. Fantastic.
Even after that horrible thing I just said.
That's okay. No one heard it.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. Let's all hug. All right. I'll give you my shrink's number. You can unburden yourself.
Sweet.
All right. Read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. Peter Carlin, my friends. We'll see you next week.
Okay, bye.
There you go. Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen.
God, right. You talk a lot.
What a golden guest he is. Giving us a shower of words. What?
Let's bring in Scotty.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
I want my Uncle Charlie sausage.
Scotty J to the Rick Emerson studio, please. Hello. Hello. Hi, Scotty J. How are you, sir?
Doing good.
All right, let's get rolling with this. The Suburban Perspective. All right, Scotty. During the Iraq War segment earlier, you were noting your thoughts on the Iraq War. You typed something on the screen about if they just quit shooting at us, the war would be over.
Exactly, and you summed it all up right there.
I'm listening.
Evidently, somebody is still shooting at us, so...
Who are those people?
Insurgents. Terrorists. Iraq has become a breeding ground for all these people to just... They're like, hey, we can't afford a plane ticket to the United States, so come on over here, the U.S.
What people?
And fight us. The terrorists.
Terrorists from where?
They're over there in the Mideast. They're coming from everywhere into Iraq to fight.
From everywhere where?
Everywhere, meaning the outlying countries that we've talked about. Syria, Afghanistan.
So they're going...
Iran. They're going through these other countries into Iraq.
The terrorists are going to exactly where the military is waiting with all its weapons.
Yes.
And why would they do that?
Because they hate Americans.
Who hates Americans?
The insurgents and the terrorists.
And so your solution to the Iraq war is that we should quit shooting at them?
No. If they stop shooting at us, the war's over. Right? People keep saying, oh, we keep sending more troops in there.
Who was the war in Iraq between?
Originally, it was supposed to be against, Saddam Hussein and his, team of buffoons that we took out.
That's not a fair question because nobody knows why the war began.
Hey, thanks, Sarah.
Well, no, wait a minute. Now,
is
Scotty,
that for the visa?
Scotty disagrees. Scotty disagrees, though. Now, Scotty.
No, it started out that they're fighting against Saddam Hussein and his supposed weapons of mass destruction, which he did have that we supplied to them at one time. Okay, we did not know that he still. We did not know that he didn't still have these weapons. He had already dropped them on his people. So, there you go. And we allowed that to happen.
What people did he drop them on?
Is it the not the Syrians, the... See? Started with a K. How's that? Am I close?
Kosovo?
No! No, the people. The name of the people in Iraq started with a K.
So we went to
right?
war. Originally,
right.
The Iraq war was to fight Saddam.
Yes.
And now...
We took him out, and then...
Who
more
is fighting
and more
now
and
in
more
Iraq?
And more and more and more people started just coming in because it was a free ride to go to war. And that's all they do over there in the Mideast. Fight war after war after war, year after year after year after year after year, and it'll never end.
And so
what I'm saying is, all these people that are complaining that we're sending more troops in there and whatnot, and why are we still there, and what a wasted war, and why don't we just come home? If they'd stop shooting at us, then we could get to business over there and get some stuff done.
And what is it we're getting done?
We need to build a couple temples and a skating rink and a karaoke bar, but we can't do it because we're being shot at.
What kind of temple are we building?
I don't know, something for the, the masses over there to, because we bombed everything, they need something to pray at.
A temple.
Mm-hmm.
Because we bombed them all.
Yes.
So if we give them a temple?
And we need to give back the golden toilets that we stole from Saddam and rebuild the community.
So, without us there, do you believe that if we were to leave now, that the fighting in Iraq would stop?
No.
Because who?
What I believe is if those idiots, and they are idiots.
Who?
The terrorists and the insurgents and all the people that are in Iraq right now shooting at us Americans.
Yes.
If they would just stop shooting at us, there wouldn't be a war any longer.
Now, do you believe that maybe the shooting in Iraq is happening at people other than Americans?
Yeah.
So who else is
obviously
fighting
we're
Iraq?
Shooting back at them.
Yes, but what other kind of hostilities might be happening in Iraq right now?
Hostilities where one group of subordinates are against another group.
And that's called a what?
I'm not going to fall into this trap. It starts with a C and ends with an ibble, and I'm not gonna.
A civil war. Yeah. You do not believe there's a civil war happening?
Not yet, anyways. Not yet.
What would happen to make you think there was?
You can call the whole thing a civil war then, because people were coming in from all different countries the whole time. So it was just a civil war from the minute we dropped our first bomb.
Well, no, that's an invasion. Now. What is the definition of a civil war to you?
Civil war is where you have, like the United States, where we had the South and the West come together against each other.
So when two groups of people in the same country. So are there two groups of people in the same country fighting each other now?
More than that.
So there are.
I firmly believe there's five or six different.
So there are groups of people within the same country fighting.
Sure. Where are we going with this? I mean,
so is that a civil war?
Okay, Rick, let me ask you this. Who cares if it is a civil war? What does that have to do with the Americans being there or not? Or where are you going with this? What are you trying to say?
Do you believe that
since it's a civil war, we should not be there? We should just pack up our bags and leave?
No, there's no need to get hostile. I'm just asking now, do you believe it's a civil war?
I do not believe that. I told you that earlier.
And
I'm not hung today, so I can answer all the questions. Throw them at me. In fact, let's change the subject.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Do you have a question for Scotty J?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, no, I didn't have a question. I was just really boggled at what he's saying here. So by his logic, if the Germans had just quit shooting at us, we could have stopped World War II. Is that it?
Sure.
And also apparently that if...
What's not logical about that?
Yes. Also,
what is not logical about that? Really, I'm asking you.
So now, and according to your own government statistics, only about 2% of the people fighting in Iraq happen to be from other countries. Everybody fighting in Iraq are Iraqis of two different types, fighting against each other for control.
Now,
that
Rick,
sounds strange
did
like
I say
a civil
that?
War.
Did
like
I say
2%?
No.
Not the West and the South.
As a matter of fact, I said that most of the people fighting in Iraq are not from Iraq. They're all coming in.
Right, he's noting that government disagrees with you.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you.
Your own government, man.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, sir. Hello, Rick Emerson Show. You're on the Suburban Perspective.
Hi. I wanted to say Scotty J's right about... I'm a driver, though. Could you play the sounder?
He is
right in that we should support Bush's decision at this time more than ever. You see, I mean, I know why Bush is the worst president since Coolidge, probably. But right now, when we're going in there, we need to... he's right. We need to clear the area, police it, and then build it back up. It's basically our last best chance. It'll probably fail, but then we can at least say when it failed, hey, we were behind in that last chance.
There you go, Scotty. You got one.
Sweet.
There you go. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Do just come here, and then we've got a break. Hello, Rick Emerson. You're on the Suburban Perspective with Scotty J.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I didn't have a question really pertaining to the issues that Scotty has with the war in Iraq.
Go ahead, sir.
But I did want to ask him about what you guys discussed last Friday with him saying that he didn't look like Bill Macy.
Yes.
Which I can understand he doesn't want to be known as the cooler of the program. But he said that he looks more like Brad Pitt. And I was wondering which Brad Pitt he was referring to as far as maybe either the 12 Monkeys Brad Pitt or the
Brad Pitt.
Yeah, it's true. When he had shorter hair and he had a goatee.
Such as?
This would be, I don't know, maybe...
Like Thelma and Louise,
maybe 5-6 years
like
ago.
Like 7-era Brad Pitt?
No, well, 5-6 years ago. Would that be 7? Would that be the 12 Monkeys?
5 or 6 years ago would be like Fight Club Brad Pitt.
There you go.
He believes he looks like Fight Club era Brad Pitt, sir.
Okay, well, I was thinking he was more like a post-Baywatch David Hasselhoff, but, you know, I could accept that.
All right, thank you, sir. All right, there you go. We got to take a break. All right, there you go. The Suburban Perspective, ladies and gentlemen, with Scotty J. Back after this to wrap it up. We got Likas and 3 Dynamike at 7. Sit there. into the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show.
Postman is the person in your neighborhood.
I've fallen, and I can't get up.
Fantastic. Hello, Mailman Chris.
You guys are hilarious.
Well,
is that Scotty J's doing?
Yeah, it is. That is Scotty J.
You know, real quick before I get the recap,
yeah.
I'll bring this up then, since Scotty J's a good friend of mine. About 6 minutes to the hour when you guys were discussing the Civil War.
Yeah.
Did anyone else catch the fact that he said that the Civil War in the United States was the South versus the West?
I didn't catch that, but apparently he said that because many people pointed that out to me.
Yeah, so. South versus the West. I remember that miniseries, West versus South. That was a good miniseries.
He says he meant the North versus the West.
The North versus the West, yeah.
No, we'll be excerpting that out and playing it repeatedly.
Okay, and all, everything you got to today, Studio Countdown, Chopping the Penis, Creepiest Sound Ever by Michael Jackson.
How great is that sound, by the way?
That is awesome. I was 17 sheets of the wind, and I heard Jen play that on the turntable.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Let's hear it once more right now.
He put the little round object in his mouth. It was delicious.
You know, and I think it's the sound effects in between, before he starts giggling.
It's the slurping and the it's that. It's a whole lot of, like, I ate his liver with, you know, a nice Chianti. That's totally what that is, yeah.
Hillary as a contender, Lisa, Jim, and Peter, you got to everything.
Booyah! In your face, bitches. That's what I'm talking about. All right, fantastic. There you go. So,
am I the only one that pictured, I'm a huge fan of the old Saturday Night Live and the 90s era Saturday Night Live. When you were telling the penis watch, I just kept picturing Dana Carvey with the Chopping Broccoli song.
Oh, yeah.
Chopping,
you know,
penis.
My wife had never heard the Chopping Broccoli song, so I had to find that online for her. Because that actually predates SNL. That actually was on, that was part of his old stand-up act. And so it was on this Nickelodeon show called Turkey TV every now and again. And so I actually had to track that down online and play that for her. That's a bit that he used to do in his stand-up, but he resurrected. And boy, the thing is, I played that for her once, and it's been stuck in our head ever since then. And occasionally, like, I'll wake up in the morning and she's just, like, in the kitchen, whatever, making pancakes or something, and she'll just be humming to herself, Chopping Broccoli. For, like, no reason. So, it's insane.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, out of control. All right. Mailman Chris, we will speak to you tomorrow, my friend.
Speak to you tomorrow.
Thank you. There you go. This is Mailman Chris, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Let's see. Coming up tomorrow, Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Jim Roop and Lisa Goddard, who once again was referring to her fiancé as her boyfriend today, for those who are playing the home game. The Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the ailing but indomitable Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970, Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley. Our PA is Scotty J. And the manager of the Rick Emerson Office East is Dave Zinn. As always, thank you for listening. Don't let the bastards grind it down. Like us next. Down on Mike at 7. See y'all tomorrow at 11. Bye now.
Charlie Sausage.